raw, uncut, and unapologetic. Welcome to Men Talking Mindfulness with your hosts John McCaskill and Will Schneider. Here we focus on helping men and those with men in their lives solve some of life's complex challenges through understanding the practices of mindfulness and how they can help. Each episode is in an environment free of judgment and criticism, with a focus on authenticity and inner peace. Let's dig in.
The foundation of a life that's fulfilling is a relationship with yourself that is trustworthy. If you could have gotten that simply by being smart, you would already be there. That's a quote from Jay Field's website, our guest today. Welcome to the Men Talking Mindfulness podcast, a show and podcast where I, John McCaskill in Colorado Springs, along with my brilliant co-host and brother from another mother, Will Schneider in New York City, do our best to demystify mindfulness and all things related to mindfulness. We're excited to have you with us today as we discuss creating emotional stability with educator, coach, and author Jay Fields. But before we get into that, I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Will, my brother from another mother, for announcements and such. Will, how are you,
brother? Thank you. I'm great. Just want to say hello to you, John. Hello to everybody out there that's watching us live and anyone that's listening on podcast later on. Great, great, great to be here. Couple announcements. We have our MTM summer merch sale going on right now until July 31st. So add to your MTM merch collection or start one today. The sale includes five different colors of men's and women's tees, new tank tops, three different styles of trucker hats, and a new, I'm excited for this one, John, a new limited edition custom designed super MTM t-shirt. We dropped the prices too so that you could buy more of your favorite MTM merch or get one for a friend or family member. You know, so head over to mentalkingmindfulness.com/merch today. And we really thank you for your support. Once again, that's mentalkingmindfulness.com/merch and get your merch. And sale ends July 31st. Also, you know, if you want to escape all the noise and join us for our first mindfulness adventure retreat in scenic Durango, Colorado on September 16th to the 19th, please join us. Our early bird savings ends on July 18th. You know, we have limited space available, and as of today, we have sold nearly half of our spots that are available. So if you're thinking about it, get off the fence and sign up at mentalkingmindfulness.com/retreat. And that's our announcements. And I'm going to talk about our brilliant, there she is. There's Jay Fields, who just brought her up onto the screen. Jay, thank you so much for being here with us.
And, I'm thrilled. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I am too. Like, God, the more I've dug into your work and actually did your course, the more I've gotten excited about our conversation today. But first, Jay's bio for everybody out there. Jay Fields is an educator, coach, author who has taught the principles of embodied social, emotional, and relational intelligence to individuals and organizations for 20 years. Her approach to helping people have their own back at work and in their life is grounded, playful, empathic, and intelligent. Jay received her PA, her Bachelor's of Arts, right, in psychosocial health and human movement from the College of William and Mary, and her Master's of Integral Transformative Education from Prescott College. She is the author of the LinkedIn Learning courses. There's two of them, Managing Your Emotions at Work and Practices for Regulating Your Nervous System and Reducing Stress. When not working with clients or facilitating trainings, you can find Jay riding her motorcycle with her sweetie in the mountains outside of Ojai, California, where she lives. Jay, thank you again for joining us today. We're going to go into our grounding practice with John. I can always use this grounding practice, John. Like, I don't know what it is. I get really amped up before the show.
Yeah.
And here we are. I know, right? And maybe do a little movement, right? That's one thing. Yeah, I got to say right away, from your LinkedIn learning course, Jay, you know, you had, and you just did it. You just did it right here on the air, shaking it off, right? So just kind of like, you know, an animal that gets hit by a car, you know, they get off the ground and they just kind of shake it out. Remember, we learned this from Dr. Rob, John. Okay. Anyway, sorry. I'll let go, John, and you can do the grounding practice.
Well, one, Will, I love how excited you are. That shows you are, you love this show, you love what we're doing, and you love having Jay here with us. So that's great. And Jay, I saw you off camera doing exactly what we're talking about. So you practice what you preach. So that's fantastic.
I'm
great
trying.
To have you here.
Yeah.
All right. So with that, we're going to try to practice what we preach. We preach mindfulness and meditation, and we'd like to kick the show off with a grounding practice, wrap the show up with a grounding practice. So let's do just that. So if you're listening and it's safe to do so, go ahead and close your eyes. If you're comfortable doing so, close your eyes. If you're watching and it's not safe to do so, or you're not comfortable doing so, please keep your eyes open. But do whatever's comfortable and safe for you. How about that? That's an easier way of doing it. Get into that comfortable position, whatever that may look like for you, in your place, in your space, in your time. And let's just bring our attention to our breath. Intentionally bringing that attention to our breath and the physical aspects of your breath. Your breath is yours and yours alone. It is with you all day long, all night long, with you all the time. Pay attention to each physical aspect. The inhalation, notice where the air is entering your body. The exhalation, notice where the air is leaving your body. Notice how the air feels as it enters your body. And how it feels as it leaves. Notice what that air is doing as it expands your lungs, your diaphragm drops, chest and belly expand on that inhalation and the reverse on that exhalation. And just sit in silence and peace for a few moments. If you notice that your mind has wandered off to some other space, some other place, some other time, let's bring it back to focusing on that breath. And now expand your awareness to your whole physical being and note what it is you're feeling physically. What it is you're hearing or not hearing, seeing or not seeing, smelling or not smelling, and tasting or not tasting. From those physical sensations, let's go inward to the emotional side. How are you feeling? Note that. Don't try to change it. Don't feel the need to judge it. Just be with it. Sit with it. And we'll close with two deep cleansing breaths together. Begin by breathing out as much air as you can, bringing your navel to your spine. Deep inhalation, filling those lungs all the way, holding at the top, and release, release, release. Sitting empty at the bottom, noting that emptiness. Deep breath in, Hold at the top and relax, 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 and start to bring some movement into your body, maybe moving your head around, your shoulders around, loosening up your torso. And if your eyes were closed, go ahead and start to blink them open. And here we are, Men Talking Mindfulness with Jay. Let's get this started.
Yes, it's very tough.
I'm yawning. I'm sorry.
Oh my God. It's tough to sit with enthusiasm, John. It's really hard to sit with enthusiasm, I got to say. Well, again, thanks, Jay, for being here. Let's just kick it off with, you know, you describe yourself as a somatic coach. You know, what is that? And then how did you get into this work?
Yeah, so soma comes from the Greek word body, or is the Greek word for body. So somatic means working with the body. Obviously, also the whole person. So the mind, the emotions, the spirit, all of that. So that's the integral approach that you mentioned in my master's degree. And my journey started as a yoga teacher, actually, same as you, back in 1999. I started teaching yoga. I was also teaching rock climbing at the time. I was in college at William & Mary. And I was fascinated by how those two practices, yoga and rock climbing, changed my psychological well-being. You know, like when I was doing those, I felt like a different human being. And so I asked to make my own major and study what I made up as psychosocial health and human movement, which back in 1999, like that mind-body connection wasn't real mainstream yet. So, but that's essentially what I studied, was how do we use our connection to our body in the present moment as a way of being able to access preventative psychological, to be able to work with people in a health space, like before they get dysregulated or before they get into a really negative space. So my 20s was pretty much spent between a yoga studio teaching yoga, or out in the backcountry teaching rock climbing, or taking adjudicated youth into the wilderness. And over time, really seeing where those two pieces came together, I started to then study more of trauma-informed work. Because what I was realizing after teaching yoga and working with bodies for a long time was, I can't work with a room full of 40 people teaching them all the same thing. Everybody's having such an internally different experience. How do I speak to that? So I started studying trauma-informed approach to teaching at the same time that I started studying neuroscience and what's actually happening in the body as we're doing all this stuff. Because, you know, as people who are meditation and yoga practitioners, you know, like you feel something happening, but what is it? Why is that happening? And I got really interested in that. And then about 12 years ago, I wrote a book called Teaching People Not Poses. And the unofficial title was How Not to Be a Douche and Teach Yoga, which I never put in the book, but that was what I was
talking. I got to read this book.
Because
it's awesome.
It was the idea of being like, how do you be an expert and a human being at the same time? And since teaching yoga is what I knew, that was the lens through which I talked about it. Because they, you know, especially as someone who teaches something that's around mindfulness or having your life together, people think you do, and it's like, oh man, you know, talk to my best friend and you're gonna hear the real stuff. So I wrote this book about like how to make actual connections with other people through being a human. And then people started asking me to coach them. And I was like, really, you wanna pay me to coach you? Okay. And mostly I worked with yoga teachers in the beginning. And then they started telling their friends like, hey, you don't have to be a yoga teacher to work with Jay. Really, she just helps you kind of get grounded in your body and mm-hmm. be more authentic. Yeah. And so my coaching practice spread to working with people from all different backgrounds. And then that spread to working in organizations, and you know, my clients would say, oh, can you come in and do a lunch and learn? And then that would turn into doing programs within the organizations. And I did a lot of work, particularly in hospitals with doctors and nurses and direct care professionals, anyone who works with people for a living, because the thing, as you guys know, because you say the thing that works about your podcast is that it's authentic and it's real. And that's what works about any kind of healing, is that you can show up with another person and they can feel you. So that's kind of how I emerged into being a somatic coach. I kind of backed my way into it. And then in 2020, when the pandemic hit, I stopped teaching yoga. So for first time in 22 years, I wasn't teaching yoga. I wasn't working in organizations. I was just doing my one-on-one and group coaching. So that's the big long story of it.
Well, Will could attest to, you know, the fact that here on the show, I somewhat look like I have my life together, but when he visited my house in Colorado Springs with my three children, that it is complete chaos. As a matter of fact, we have a little doormat right outside our front door that says, I hope you like animals because welcome to the zoo. Because it's complete chaos. But a lot of us are like that, right? Like we present this professional persona, if you will, and the true selves sometimes are not the exact same thing. And it's important to understand, if you're getting coaching, you're getting training from someone, knowing that they're a human being is very important. And that's what we try to, you know, put forth here in the show, is that authenticity and that vulnerability. So I love that you're doing that, Jay. It's very important to be able to connect with your people and connect with coach.
It's a disservice, I think, to not show your humanity to the people you work with. And I think it's, like I said, part of the healing.
For sure.
Yeah, I think, well, with your book, How Not to Be a Douchebag Teacher, but
you know, unofficial.
Because, yeah. I know. Okay. Teaching people, not poses. And I like the way that you put that, because, I hear, I see a lot of like younger teachers, like they, or I still to this day, I mean, there's not as many classes going on here in New York, but, they put on their yoga voice. You know, like, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Like, people, they're like, okay, everybody, well, we're going to take a few breaths and we're going to have a wonderful class together today. And then they're like running through the class. And it's like, they're completely, because we're going to talk about embodiment, right, today. And this is kind of a great example of that, you know, and they kind of get into this airy fairy kind of like, you know, trying to sound mystical and profound kind of voice as when they're teaching a yoga class. And it just, it lacks a lot of a deeper connection. Whereas like, I've had a big shift.
That actually is one of the principles I wrote, 10 principles for teaching yoga with integrity. One of them was use your voice, not the airy fairy voice.
Exactly. And I feel that people, you know, they do that just because they're scared. Or a lot of people, you know, I mean, all the three of us have been teaching for quite a while now. It's like, it takes a while to kind of get into, you know, like, okay, I don't care. I mean, that's, I think, one of the reasons we say raw, uncut, unapologetic, because we just try to make this as authentic and vulnerable as possible. And that, and those two qualities right there, regardless whether they're doing the show or I'm teaching a class, or John, you're probably feeling when you're running workshops somewhere, it's like, it just provides so much forgiveness, you know, from your students. But also, you know, I've heard my students, like, you know, when I screw up in class, and I'll even flat out admit that I was like, oh my God, like, that was a disaster. Let's go back and do that again. You know, and people will be like, they'll tell me, like, thank you for that. Because in those moments, you know, in that moment, like, I was able to let go of me being inauthentic, or me, you know, trying to be perfect in class or something like that. So, you know, I really love how you kind of did back your way into it, but you're kind of like teaching, you know, some of the same, you know, principles in this, but like to a broader audience instead of just like yoga teachers. So, brilliant.
Absolutely. And that was part of what I loved about that. What I loved about teaching was teaching yoga, was teaching people who would never show up in a yoga room, you know, because I love the idea of like, give this a shot. And if we don't come at it from a super woo woo out there way, like, I think you'll dig it. And then translating that into a wider audience, that when I did the LinkedIn learning courses, you know, that was really specifically for professionals in the workplace. And it's all the same principles. And everybody, I think every human person in a body needs this stuff. And it's like, if you can find a way to deliver it that people can hear it, that's the way to go.
Why don't we jump into, I would love you to make the distinction between embodied awareness and like conceptual awareness. I think that would be a good place. Am I getting the terms right that you use?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a really good place to start, because that'll just kind of take us into deeper into the work that was on, you know, that you do.
Perfect.
That is, I got to say, like this LinkedIn learning course, I really would love everybody that's listening, take the 53 minutes or whatever it is and take that. I know you have two courses, but the one on managing emotions at work was so beautifully done, Jay. And so please take us to that distinction. I think it'd be a great way to start.
You couldn't have started with a better question. So the difference between conceptual self-awareness and embodied self-awareness. Conceptual self-awareness is the self thinking about the self. So it's what we do in our head. It's how the story we tell about what's happening as it's happening, or, you know, we anticipate the future, we ruminate about the past, we analyze, we try and make sense of things. And most of us who would say we are self-aware people are talking about this. We're talking about, we understand how we work because we think about it a lot. Embodied self-awareness is the self experiencing the self. So it's things like, right now, can you feel the parts of your body that touch the chair that you're sitting on? Are you aware? Are you cool or are you warm? Can you feel how your breath is moving? Are you aware of the energy? Are you low energy? Are you high energy? It's what you are actually experiencing in your body. One of the main differences is conceptual self-awareness is past or future. Embodied self-awareness is present moment. Mm. And one is not better than the other. They're different. Most of us tend to not have a lot of embodied self-awareness because we live in a culture that really is dominant in our, you know, thinking and being heady. But the thing that's super cool about embodied self-awareness is that the research shows that embodied self-awareness, not conceptual self-awareness, really aids in having things like greater regulation of your emotions, a better ability to empathize with another person, more courage, more intuition, like all the things that we think of as like, this is what makes a great human being, you know, that comes from the presence in your body, not from how smart you are intellectually.
Yeah, that big, and you know, like, is there, well, okay, the, yeah, is like that, is emotional intelligence and, you know, emotional stability, like they're very connected, right? I mean, you can't have one, you know, are they the kind of same thing? You know, because I know we talk about creating emotional stability, and then, you know, and we talk a lot in the show about elevating emotional intelligence, right? But you know, there's practice. I'm just curious, like, if there's any kind of distinction there or anything we need to kind of break down in that regard.
I would say they're linked in that emotional intelligence means that you have more, what's the word? Like that you're more fluent with emotions. You can, you can move through them. You can identify them. You can manage them. And sorry, what was the other one?
Oh, I guess like just emotional stability. You know, I guess that's more the practice
emotional stability.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or maybe the outcome, emotional stability being, I think that piece where what I would say is the definition of emotional stability is knowing that you can trust having emotions. That emotional stability isn't, you know, not having them. It's also not getting run over by them. So I would say it's like being able to have that kind of ups and downs, not dramatically. Stability doesn't mean even keel. Stability means you know that you won't get knocked off your feet onto your ass, you know?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. It's like, I know there's a lot of talk about how mindfulness and stoicism, there's a lot of overlap there. And, I actually kick back on that and push back on that and say that, you know, a lot of stoics want to have that, what you mentioned, like being even keel and not really having emotions, not displaying emotions, not getting happy, not getting sad, not getting angry.
Right.
And I believe mindfulness is having the emotions and being okay with those emotions and sitting with them and going through them. And that, I believe, keeps you from getting, like you said, getting knocked on your ass, that emotional stability by being with them, being okay with them, and not judging yourself for having those emotions. Because I think that's where you know, you were talking about the the different cognitions and how having that recognition that you are happy and then beating yourself up for being happy in maybe a sad environment or vice versa, beating yourself up for being sad or angry. And it's just this cycle. But if we're okay with the emotions, don't get knocked on our ass, that's the stability that you're speaking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think a lot of the times, you know, the distinction between mindfulness and embodiment is semantic, and it depends on how you view it. But I do think, you know, old school or traditional thoughts of mindfulness is that it is that kind of even keel. And it's not a place where I'll often ask people, you know, think of someone who you would you say is mindful? And can you feel that person? Because sometimes really quote unquote mindful people are fairly, you know, there's like this veneer of just, I'm quiet and calm, but you're not like the way you can feel a kid, you know, you're around a kid and they're full of life and you can sense connection. And
right.
So I think, yeah, depending on how you're learning mindfulness, you can be taught unknowingly to disconnect, or you can be taught to connect. And I think that's where the added piece of like the embodiment can add some skills around connecting and accepting and riding those emotional experiences.
With being with our emotions, it's really, I mean, we're emotional beings at our core, right? I mean, and maybe we can just kind of unpack and talk about that. And if when we begin to develop this emotional literacy and begin to embody our emotions, we, you know, instead of being overcome, you know, by these sometimes incredibly, you know, rich and, you know, off-putting emotional states, or that kind of can shift the way that we're doing everything, thinking, feeling, our actions. You know, when we can take a breath, kind of shake it off, have some tools, which we'll talk about later, you know, today as well, and really be felt. And one thing as I was moving through your course, Jay, is, you know, the first part is really creating that awareness. And you talk about how do we get down, like you say, getting down to the level of our nervous system. You know, what does it take to kind of to get there? Because I mean, that's kind of, you know, so we have the ideas, we have the concepts of like, you know, a conscious self-awareness and embodied self-awareness, or conceptual self-awareness and embodied self-awareness, which is great. But then how do we get into that level of nervous system and kind of how does that help us to unlock and become more emotionally stable and more fluid, you know, kind of in the world, you know?
Well, as you say that, what I think of is like, to your listeners, think about your typical day. Most of you are probably, you know, sitting at computers, or you're in meetings, or, you know, you're working with clients in such a way where the focus is really on other people and producing some kind of outcome. You might find yourself like realizing after a few hours, oh my God, I have to pee so bad because I haven't been present at all enough to, you know, or I'm so hungry. Or like my partner does it all the time where he's working through the day. I'm like, have you eaten lunch? He's like, oh no, it's 4 o'clock. You know, didn't even notice that the time went by and he hadn't eaten. Wasn't he was hungry, right?
I think you may have listened to my conversation yesterday with my wife. I literally got home yesterday. I was like, you know what, babe? I sat down on my computer yesterday morning and didn't get back up until 4 o'clock. And, you know, yeah. I teach movement, I teach mindfulness, and I was like, man, I feel terrible. I didn't get up to eat. Yeah. I didn't get up to pee. I was like, what in the world have I been doing? So I think exactly. You may have been listening to our conversation.
Yeah. And you get into this like tunnel vision where everything is a little foggy, but you're like hyper-focused on this one thing in front of you.
Yeah.
And then you might go out and like go for a run, or you might go pick up basketball and play with your kids or something, but even that doesn't necessarily mean you're present in your body. You might be moving your body, but it's different than being actually present in your body. And so what I would say is like the very beginning part of shifting towards more embodied self-awareness is interrupt your day with little practices of like, can I feel my feet on the ground right now? The shaking thing, like just get up and shake your body. Something as tiny but significant is look around the room you're in. take your eyes off of whatever it is you're focusing on, move your head and your neck, because that helps to stimulate the vagus nerve, take in colors, take in shapes, you know, and add in those little pieces that are just like 15 seconds of remembering that you have a body. Do I have to pee? You know, am I thirsty? And what I tell my clients all the time is layer that, like, so that's a practice, right? A practice of checking with your body. Layer those practices, which means if you already make 3 cups of coffee a day, when you go pour your coffee, there's 3 opportunities for you to feel your feet on the ground, you know, or hopefully you brush your teeth at least once or twice a day, right? Like when you're brushing your teeth, practice looking around the room and look for 5 colors or 5 things that are blue. Things that get you out of your freaking head, right? It's like little pieces of just change the channel for 15 seconds.
Yeah. Well, this is called orienting, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Good student.
I am very good.
Quick study.
Yeah.
Very quick study. But also, John, like just getting up, moving around, doing your head thing, boom, right into quench, right into micro movements, right? That's going to help also increase your energy levels too. You know what I mean? Just by, I mean, drinking water, but also just boom, like when we're sitting and being so sedentary, you know, I mean, all throughout the day, like, you know, John taking 8 hours and not peeing or walking or doing anything, just like, you know, it's like our body, we literally start to shut down, you know, we start to shut down, you know, levels of our brain that'll bring more focus and creativity, you know, even though we are trying to focus as much as we can, but like taking those, you know, the like every 20 minutes, 30 minutes, just getting up, reorienting, right? Taking in those 5 colors, looking around, you know, maybe getting up and going to the bathroom that's on like 3 floors down. So you have a little more time to get in your body maybe, and then come all the way back up and then sit. It's just going to help you to be more high functioning. But also that orienting, if you keep doing that throughout the day, is just going to help you to get into that embodied awareness, or at least it's kind of the gateway to start, right? It's like, it might not help you to identify exactly what your emotional state is, but I guess that would be like kind of the next level would be like, all right, well, how am I feeling right now?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll go back and actually say the way that I like to teach this, and it's not in the LinkedIn course, but this kind of simple way of teaching is the ABCs. So A stands for awareness, and that would be orienting, like look around the room, take your eyes off of the things that you're looking at. And kind of like John did in the beginning, what sounds can you hear? What's the quality of light in the room that you're in? Looking for familiar objects or things that, you know, people keep pictures on their desks because they're people they love, like actually look at them, take a moment, take your eyes and like feel what it looks like to look at that picture. So A being orienting or awareness. B in the ABC stands for body. So body is anything that reminds you that you exist from your neck down. It could be the shaking, it could be stretching, it could be patting, you know, tapping your chest, pretending like you're washing your hands, you know, like you get the sensation, you also get the sound, something that pulls you back into, I'm here. This is a body, I live in it. And then C stands for centering. And maybe at the end, I'll take you through a centering practice. It'll be kind of a nice grounding / launch to the rest of the day practice for people. But centering being, you know, the basic of it is to sit up or stand up taller, broaden your collarbones. I like to also lift my arms and get wider, you know, feel yourself in kind of all directions, and then drop your arms and just like, okay, here I am again. This is me. So those, all three of those things, ABCs, if you pick one of them, takes seconds. If you do that 40 times a day, guess what? Mm. You're more embodied, like automatically. So what I like about the embodied practices is that they're not the things that are like 15, 20, 30 minutes a day. They're the things that are like 15, 30 seconds at a time. To reestablish a connection to I'm in a body, move on. Because when you do that, you're getting that embodied self-awareness, which is lighting up the different parts of your brain that help you more critically think, more emotionally, be more emotionally resonant, all of that stuff that like brings the fullness of you back into whatever thing you're doing and is ultimately going to make it better.
How do you, because this is all really great information, and you know, I enjoy doing these things and just kind of, I don't really have the names for it, but like I'm always reorienting, I guess. Maybe that's why I always do my little antics, John, before the show.
Exactly. I just thought of that. And, like, oh, he's walking through his face. Exactly. Now he's going to use that excuse, John.
Exactly. That's what I was just about to say.
Thanks. I'm orienting, John. That's what I'm going to say. Jay, you just gave me a perfect segue for all my bullshit before the show.
You're welcome.
But what if somebody, you know, like, how do we make this a practice? Like, what is, you know, how do we begin to remind ourselves in order to reorient to ground or center?
So set a timer on your phone or on your computer to go off at randomly throughout the day. And anytime it goes off, that's your cue to do one of those ABCs. You can write a note to yourself somewhere, but know that you're going to have to change that every 5 days, like where it is or what it says, because your brain will stop seeing it after a while. Mm. Like, so leave yourself reminders, but know that you have to switch up the reminders. And then, like I said, layer the practices. If there's something that you already do, I mean, like every time you go pee, every time you go to the bathroom, like use that as a reminder. Oh yeah, I have a body. Why don't I take an extra 20 seconds to ground myself or center?
Right. And breathing would help with that. I'm sure the grounding and the centering, you know, just, you know, just to kind of keep us present. Yeah. John.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you talked about the ABCs of getting present in your body. And can you talk about the four F's of an emotional response? Since we're doing ABCs, let's go into the four F's of the emotional response.
You know,
The four F's.
This reminds me.
F's.
This is four F's. This is, let me just say, I had this, I have two brothers, so there's three of us. And my, one of my dad's best friends, and we'd go vacation with him every year. And the one day we walk up the steps, the three of us together. And, my dad's friend goes, "Oh, look at the Off Brothers." And I was like, they're like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, Jerk, Jack and Fuck." Anyway, sorry.
I don't know how we got here. How did we get to this?
I don't know either.
You know what?
That's, anyway,
four F's.
Yeah, three F's, four F's. Close. Right. Okay. Close. I'm sorry. Yeah. That reminded
me. No,
yeah. Anyway.
Well, and thanks, John. You know, you said that, and I was like, "Oh, what's that?" And then I realized that's another one of those ones. Like, "Oh yeah, I wrote that."
You wrote that.
Yeah, you did. You did write that. You did write that.
Got it. So the four F's. This is what I found over years of actually, you know, being in my own body and watching myself with this, but also working with other people. So when we have an emotion, most people have one of three, I would say, common responses. The fourth one's the not common one. So the first one is figured out. If I'm suddenly feeling an emotion, my brain tells me, oh, if I can figure out why this is happening, I can make it stop. So this is where that conceptual self-awareness can come in and kind of get you stuck in rumination, right? Like you feel something intense, you're sad maybe. And instead of feeling the sadness, you think about it. Well, why am I sad? What, you know, who made this starting to happen? And when did that, you know, all that thinking about it. You're not actually feeling the feeling, you're trying to figure it out. So that's one F, figure it out. Second F is fix it. If I can figure out why I'm having this feeling and I can fix something externally to stop this feeling from happening, then I'll do that. So for example, if there's something about your job that you're really unhappy about, rather than feeling the unhappiness, you'll try and get out of that particular project or leave the job altogether. You know, like the way that we do some of these knee jerk, I'm out sort of things, or I'm gonna reconstruct this, or I'm gonna control you because your behavior is making me feel this way. So if I can get you to stop that, then I don't have to feel this way. Mm-hmm. So fixing it is another way that we tend to try and manage emotions. The third F, to your prior joke, is fuck it. which is, if I can't figure it out and I can't fix it, then fuck it. Like, it's not important. It's where we pretend. You could also, for the, you know, the non cussers, you could say fool yourself. Fool yourself. Like, it doesn't bother me. That doesn't matter. And you kind of put it into this place of like, that's stupid. I don't have to get upset about that. But when in reality, it really does matter. And it really is bothering you. The fourth F is feel it. Pretty much nobody does that. Like, that's usually, even as someone who teaches this stuff, it is not usually my first go-to when an emotion comes up. I usually try to do one of the other three first before I eventually go, oh, I could just feel this. Like, I could actually just let it in that right now I'm sad, or right now I'm super scared, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where those practices come into being, because all those ABCs that I talked about, they're what's called a felt resource. And the idea behind a felt resource is that it gives you an experience of yourself in the present moment, and two, a layer of experience that is neutral or pleasant. Mm. So what that does is, if you're having an unpleasant emotion happening, and you can also feel your feet on the ground, the feet on the ground for most people is neutral, maybe even pleasant. So if you have one layer of your experience that doesn't suck, you have a container. You have a container for whatever is uncomfortable. And that's what those ABCs or felt resources eventually do, is they create one felt connection to something in your body in a real-time present moment that isn't awful, that could help you be resourced. And one more thing about that, I'll say, traditionally, breath is not considered a felt resource, which I found really fascinating when I first learned it. Because for a lot of people, breath is the way that they calm themselves and kind of get present. For a lot of people, it's really hard and they can't do it. When you're super emotionally activated, for many people, myself included, breath isn't my doorway in. Breath makes it harder for me to, like, if I try and take a deep breath and I can't, then I feel even more anxious. Like, shit, it must be really bad if I can't breathe.
Wow.
But the natural consequence of any of those other practices, like feel your feet on the ground or shake or look around the room, the natural consequence of those is that you do tend to start breathing again. So for any of your listeners who have forever and ever been like, man, breathing is really hard way for me to get present, then try one of the other ways, because it will help you get to the breath without it feeling like you're hitting a brick wall.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one, because I mean, one of the things that I do is I teach first responders, service members, the breathing techniques. And a lot of the time they're like, well, you know, I'm on the street and I've just stopped someone on a stop, and I'm walking up to the vehicle and I don't have a chance to take that breath. But if they have that chance just to get present in their body, feel their feet on the ground, that can help them get to that breath eventually. But in the meantime, it helps them get them centered in the here and now. So I like that. I'm gonna start using that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Great.
Well, I know that we have an exercise you're gonna work us through, Jay, which I'm excited, but I thought before we jumped into that, you know, I have a question here. Is like, how important is self-empathy to developing emotional stability? You know,
massively. Like,
yeah. Okay.
Massively.
What does that look like?
And I would say that would be kind of the end part. If I was going to take you through those practices I was telling you about, self-empathy is the last one I was going to mention, but I can mention it here. And that being, you know, back to John's
whatever you want to do, Jay. Whatever you want to do, Jay. Yeah, but go ahead.
I'll do a little point here and then come back to it. But to John's point, you know, part of being with emotions is accepting them. And accepting it doesn't mean you like it. Accepting it doesn't mean you want it. I think it means you acknowledge that it's here and you can understand why it's there. And what the research in neuroscience tells us is that the more you can give yourself emotional resonance, meaning saying, I feel sad, for example, and it makes sense to me that I'm sad. And of course I'm sad. the more you can do that, the better you can regulate your emotions, because it helps to integrate your brain. If you're trying to tell yourself, you know, what a pussy for feeling that way, or you shouldn't feel that way, or if you weren't so sensitive, you wouldn't feel that way, or stop that, or, you know, any of the things that most of us tend to do in our head when we have an uncomfortable or vulnerable experience or emotional experience, that actually keeps you in a dysregulated place in a way that it's difficult for you to not just manage, but like soothe that feeling. So self-empathy is huge in creating the brain that you need in order to be with an emotion, really.
Well, I'll mention one hack, Jay. Go for it. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I'll mention one hack. And yeah, okay. Well, I'll mention one hack real quick, and then we can jump into what you're going to say next, and then please into your exercise. But I got a lot of comfort from this phrase: I don't want to feel this way. Like, just by saying that, right? That is like, that's that objectification, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. In the sense of like, I'm not my, yes, I have feelings. I am a human being with a body. I experience feelings based on, you know, what's happening in the environment or what's going on around me or the interactions I'm having. But just that whole like distancing yourself, right? By just saying, I don't want to feel this way. And I think even after LinkedIn Learning, you say like, when you, that, just saying that, you kind of begin to relax or begin to at least
get
more into the moment instead of your head. Yeah.
It's not distancing yourself. It's meeting yourself, because, this is what I always say. It's like, if you're doing any of the behaviors that you know you do when you're trying to numb, whether it's Netflix or it's drinking or it's overworking or any of the things that you do when you know you're just like, I'm not feeling this, your best hack to getting closer to yourself in that moment is to say, I don't want to feel this. And you don't even have to know what it is that you're trying not to feel, but saying, I don't want to feel this, is actually getting behind your own eyes and getting behind your own experience, because it's naming the thing that you're doing. You're trying to not feel something. And if you can say, I don't want to feel this, you're like automatically lining up in the present moment with yourself. And often what happens is, the thing that you're trying not to feel like just kind of slowly emerges. It's like, oh, you know, it like, you can titrate it in, as opposed to it being this tidal wave. But yeah, beautiful. I love that as a hack.
Yeah. Well, let's jump in your exercise. And if you have, like, we usually, you know, if you have a little extra time, you know, that'd be great, because I really want to finish this and not kind of rush through it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
let me say, John, it's not exactly an exercise. It's, sorry, we have a bit of a delay. I'm not that big of an interrupter, I promise.
I can be. I'm sorry. I can be sometimes. I really apologize.
So it's not really an exercise. What I wanted to share with your listeners is a little bit of like a flow. I want to give a model, reiterate a practice, a question, and a mantra, so people can see kind of the way it all works when the emotion comes on. So the model is the hand model of the brain. And I wish I could claim this is my own, but this one I didn't write, John. This is Dan Siegel. He's a clinical professor of psychology at UCLA. He's the ED of MindSight Institute. He's an author of amazing books. I recommend all of them. And the hand model of the brain is this. Imagine if you put your, make a fist, not like you were going to punch something, because you, in this one, your thumb is on the inside of your hand. So make a fist with your thumb on the inside of your hand, and that's your brain. You can kind of see it if you look at it. And in that model, your forearm is your spinal cord. The base of your palm is your brain stem. So that's the part of your brain that's the oldest part of the brain, the lizard brain, part of us that it's about like fight, flight, freeze, stress response. If you open up your fingers and your thumb is in there, that would be your limbic system, the part of our brain that's more the emotional system and memories. And in here is the amygdala. And the amygdala is kind of like the smoke alarm or smoke detector for your system. It's constantly asking the question, am I safe? Am I safe? Am I safe? Am I safe? That's there in the center. And then if you wrap your fingers back over again, that's your cortex. That's the part of your brain that is like up on your forehead that makes us uniquely human. It's the most evolved part of us, where we can communicate from, and we have creativity and spirituality, you know, all these things that make us uniquely human. So you've got this integrated brain there where all three of those parts are working in concert together, kind of checks and balances system. What happens when you have an emotional trigger is that you flip your lid. And this is where the geek in me like totally loves this. You flip your lid, the part of your brain that makes you uniquely human and capable of having like a rational conversation with somebody, gone out the window. And you are now being led by the part of you that's emotional and the part of you that is looking for survival. Not an awesome part to be speaking to your spouse from, or your kids from, or your boss, or your teammates, right? Like this is the place where you're not your best self. So I like this model because it's so simple, and I've had clients teach it to their three-year-olds and they get it. You know, it's like, I'm having a feeling, my lid's about to flip, I need to do something. Or, you know, you're feeling the like the lid is chattering, or it's already gone. And that's when you go to a practice. You go to one of the ABCs. So you say, I can feel that I'm about to flip my lid. I'm going to ground myself. I'm going to go in the other room. I'm going to shake where nobody can see me. I'm going to step away and like really casually look around the room in a way that nobody knows what I'm doing, because I just need to calm my storm and put my lid on. Because your lid's back on, your brain is integrated, and that's when you can regulate your emotions. That's when you can make sense. So here's the empathy part. This is your fingers, the part of your cortex that is like understanding and deeper thought, all that. When you can name the experience that you're having and make it make sense to you, you're literally bringing together the part of your brain that makes sense of things with the part of your brain that's having the feeling. You're putting the lid back on. So the model is the hand model of the brain, right? You get the flip lid versus the integrated brain. If your lid is flipping, you go to a practice, ABC, get yourself back into your body, give yourself some layer of your container that doesn't suck, that isn't about to scream or isn't about to shut down. And then ask yourself the question, what are the sensations in my body tell me about the feeling I'm having? And that's the naming it. In fact, Dan Siegel, the guy who came up with this hand model of the brain, he calls that part name it to tame it, because it's literally what it does. You can name the feeling, you can help to bring, it's not gonna go away, but you can bring it down a couple of notches so you can get a hold of yourself. Or again, as my fiance says, we calm your storm, right? Get to the place where you're a little bit more together. And then the final part would be, and this is the part I'm calling the mantra, the shortcut to empathy. This comes from Sarah Payton, who's a neuroscience educator and author. The shortcut is, of course I feel this way. Not you're stupid for feeling this way. You shouldn't feel this way. Don't feel this way. Don't let anybody know you feel this way. All the stuff we do. Instead, the two words, of course this is here. You know, I just lock myself out of my car and I'm late for my meeting and I'm pissed. Of course I'm pissed. That makes sense, right? It makes sense because I value my job. I respect my colleagues. I don't want to do anything that's going to, like, if you can put it in context, suddenly the emotion is congruent, not dissonant. You know, our brains hate dissonance. It's like one of the examples someone gave me a long time ago is if you were a great baseball player, and you're playing on your home team and you knock it out of the park and the entire crowd boos, it's like, what? You know, it makes you crazy. You do that enough times. Yeah. Your hometown booing you for knocking out of the park happens enough times, you go a little crazy and you don't trust that anymore. Same thing with your emotions. If every time you have an emotion and you do something dissonant that's not soothing and not kind, you will stop trusting your emotions and stop trusting your capacity to be with them.
Wow.
So yeah. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. Yeah. And you know, I find myself doing a lot of what you just mentioned, not the good side of what you just mentioned, a lot of the negative side exactly. Quite often. And again, you know, specifically as a father, or as a parent, I find myself, almost parent shaming myself for something like if I've got the three kids all yelling at the same time and it's just me there and nobody else, and one kid wants something, another kid wants something that's completely opposite from that, and there's just no way to soothe them all, then I start beating myself up for being a bad parent. But of I'm going to start using the of course I feel like this.
Right.
Of course I want to scream and run out of the room. Like that's
sometimes
that's
I do.
Reasonable. Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's that is like the most generous way of accepting yourself. Is it doesn't mean you like it, and it doesn't mean you're giving yourself permission to act on it. It means you're giving yourself permission to have that feeling, cuz God knows we have feelings that we would never say out loud, but that doesn't mean that they aren't real in our system, to our body, to our nervous system, and making them resonant and not dissonant will actually help you stay calm.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And be a human being. Like, we're human. Like, this is a human experience, right? And emotions are part of our this experience. And of course we're going to feel whatever it is in that particular moment. And I think that I like that, because it also, it kind of softens the ego in a lot of ways. It's just like, this is my experience. This is how I'm, and instead of being overcome, right, we can pick another path, you know, or make a different choice, which is exactly what we're trying to do here.
Or being disconnected from yourself. I think that's that piece. It's like, you know, all these practices are about more connection with yourself, so you can have more connection with others. Because if you're trying to be disconnected from your inner reality and your inner world, but then have a deep connection with your spouse or your kid, good luck. You know, you're not there. There's a facade of you there, but I think, and that's the piece that I would just say in terms of, you know, these practices and what you can learn in the LinkedIn learning courses, they're the foundation. They're the bedrock for then how do you show up differently in your relationships? You know, the work that I do in my coaching practice is all about relationships. I put all of this work out there, the basics of the practice, because I think everybody should have it. But if you want to come work with me, what we then talk about is like that moment you just said, John, your three kids are in there. They're all going in three different directions and you want to just go out of your mind. What do you do? Or like, how do you go from having a strong emotion to then being able to speak from your own experience to a spouse and say like, hey, this is really bothering me. We need to talk. And like do that in a way that is respectful to both parties and loving to both parties. You know, that's what I get into the nitty gritties, and I totally geek out on that.
I think, you know, one last thing to put a kind of bow around all of this. Like, I'm doing this work, I've been working with you, JSA, right? And you've been coaching me and, you know, I've been really showing up and doing the practices and, you know, embodying and becoming more emotionally aware and creating more emotional literacy. How do I know that it's having an impact in my life? Like, what are some things that your experience and experience with your students, like, how do you know the work is really making a difference, if you will?
Great question. Lots of ways, but those two succinct ways I'll say is, one, your insides match your outsides. You're no longer showing one thing and feeling something else inside. And linked to that would be, you like who you are when you're with other people.
It's beautiful.
You have a good experience of yourself, because when you don't know how to feel your feelings or manage your emotions, there's all sorts of stuff that's broiling inside or trying to be stuffed down. And that interrupts like how you connect with people, and it doesn't feel good. So you like how you feel when you're with other people. That's how you know.
Wow. Yeah. And I guess if you're not liking how you're feeling, start digging into this work. You know, get in touch with Jay, work on the LinkedIn learning, because this stuff, you know, it'll just continually serve you in every single aspect of your life. Everything will start to change as soon as you begin to get into this embodied self and begin to develop more of this emotional literacy that we've talked about this entire time. So, you know, thank you, Jay, for everything all the work that you're putting in the world. thank you for taking your time today. Cause I know that this is just so helpful to everybody, anybody that's going to listen, and anybody that is out there listening, please share this with people, everybody, you know, put it in your community, because we can all, as I think we're all seeing, we can all be more emotionally responsible, and we can show up differently if we begin to take responsibility for our emotion and our emotional life and how they affect us, and we can change that effect, or at least be with that effect and not use it to harm ourselves or other people. So,
right.
Awesome.
Do we have 20 seconds for a practice?
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I forgot. You're grounding.
As much time as you have.
We'll do really.
Yeah. For real. For real.
So
our grounding practice usually a couple minutes. So take as much time as you need. Like,
okay,
I really bring this home.
I don't need that much.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
No worries.
Bring it home. Bring it home.
Yes.
So back to the ABCs. The centering one. I said I'd come back to that. I like the practice of centering with care, because it gives you a felt experience of having an emotion. So here's how that's gonna go. I actually like practicing with my eyes open, because when you need it the most, you usually have to have your eyes open. So try it with eyes open. Mm. If you wanna close your eyes, you can. You can bring sit up a little taller or stand taller, broaden your collarbones, might even reach your arms out so you get broad that way too, and then set them back down. You might find you spontaneously take a deeper breath once you do that. And then bring your hand to your chest or to your belly, or one to both, whatever feels most comfortable. And bring to mind someone or some place or something that genuinely makes you smile. And you'll know you found it, because you will actually get like a little bit of a curl up on your lips and you'll smile. And then here's the practice. See if you can let that smile not just be on your face, but like get into what does that feel like when you smile? What do you feel in your chest? What do you feel in your toes? Is there a warmth? Is there a coolness? Is there a softening? Is there a broadening? If you allow yourself to keep with that person, place, or thing that genuinely makes you smile, and you allow in the feeling of that smile as big as you can in your body. And the idea is that you would not use this as a place to escape to. You would use it as a layer to add to whatever experience you're having in the moment. So you might also feel there's sadness, or there's tenderness, or there's fear, or there's anger, but can you feel, here's this thing, or this person, or this place that I love? Both, this is true, this is also true. There you go.
I love that. And I did feel the smile on my face as I started to think about that person.
Actually, you weren't faking it. I saw it.
Yeah, for sure. And I felt it down in my heart and in my belly and everywhere else.
I started to tear up a little bit. I just had an incredible conversation prior to the show with my nephew, who's a Marine, and he's doing a month in Hawaii, John. And he's just really turning out to be such an incredible young man. And he meditates every day. And he's just, all this work that he's been doing, like what we're talking about here, he's really starting to do it. And he's just starting to ask better questions, really beginning to see who he can be. And it's just really beautiful, to see a young man like him, he's 21, to really start to grow into the person that he can be and wants to be. But it takes work, I guess, is what I'm trying to leave us everybody here. It takes work, and you don't have to be 21. You can be 60, 50. It doesn't matter. You can start this work any time. But it takes practice, and maybe come back and listen to this episode a few times, and to really begin to get deeper into this information. That Jay, thank you. You've done such a wonderful job of this gift that you gave us today. So thank you.
Indeed. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jay, for being with us. We definitely learned a ton here. I'm going to go back and take your LinkedIn course. I hope that our listeners will do the same, and we'll make sure the link to that course is in our show notes and on the YouTube video later. For those who are watching, live, thank you for joining us live. For those who are tuning in later in the podcast, thank you for joining us in the podcast. Please share the YouTube link. Please share the podcast with your friends, family, whoever you think may need to hear it. And one more plug for our retreat that is coming up in September in Durango. That is mentalkingmindfulness.com/retreat if you want more information on that. And that is a wrap. Thank you so much.
And our shirts. And our shirts.
Merch.
Thanks, guys. Yes, merch sale going on right now. Right now.
/merch, though. All right. Until next time.
Thank you.
Peace, everyone.
Thank you.
Peace, peace. Joining us today. We hope you walk away with some new tools and insights to guide you on your life journey. New episodes are being published every week, so please join us again for some meaningful discussion. For more information, please check out mentalkingmindfulness.com.